Welcome to the sixth and final episode of Season 1 of Banking Blueprints. Throughout this season, we covered several topics, from challenges associated with core modernization in banks, to the importance of product innovation, and to the ever-evolving needs of new-age customers. Today, we wrap up by looking at what tomorrow's financial landscape looks like. Our host, Dharmesh Mistry, joined by John Blick, a two-time author and an Associate Director of Innovation at National Australia Bank. They talk about emerging technologies like digital twins and spatial finance and how it can impact the banking industry in the years to come. We hope you enjoy this final episode of Season 1. Stay tuned for Season 2, dropping soon.
Welcome to Banking Blueprints, a podcast with Zafin and me, your host, Dharmesh Mistry. Throughout this inaugural season, we'll delve into the realms of banking innovation, exploring strategies for breaking free from traditional constraints and innovating beyond the core. This week, my special guest is multiple author, John Blick, from NAB Bank in Australia. So welcome, John. Can you give the audience a little bit about your background?
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks for having me, Dharmesh. I'm super excited to be here. I've been working in the banking and the world of FinServ industry for the past decade, largely in innovation roles, where I'm focusing my time on understanding what are the disruption that banks and insurance companies are going to face, and what are the capability gaps that needs to be addressed in order to be prepared to respond to disruption. As you mentioned, side projects of mine is authoring books. So I've authored two books in domains that I'm absolutely passionate about: the space of digital twins. I know it's a passion of yours as well, Dharmesh, and how is that going to disrupt the financial services industry? And the latest one was on metaverse and how do banks operate in the metaverse, whether that things become reality or not. Nonetheless, the thought of a metaverse is really disturbing if you work in a bank.
Fantastic. I mean, I love the first book. I'm still to get through to the second, and I'm going to have to play catch up because I know you've got a third on the way. But for anyone that hasn't read the Digital Twins book, it's a must read because we're literally like embarking on that journey right now with banks starting to drive like real digital twins, cities creating, you know, their own digital twins, etc. If you don't understand it, you need to understand it because it's going to be pretty transformational going forward. But this is the reason why I've got John on the show, right? Is when we start to think about kind of new products, it's good to kind of think, well, okay, what we see at the moment largely, like 99% of the time, is incremental kind of products that, you know, we change the rate, we change the charges, we might bundle something like a bit of insurance, etc. Nothing really too innovative, right? And I think the real innovation comes when we start to think like a 10x approach, you know, which is 10 times thinking, what's the wildest thing that we can think about? And John is absolutely the man to start thinking wild. So this week's show, we're going to focus on like what can banks do to think beyond their core banking constraints, and what's the wildest products that they should be thinking about? I mean, where would you like to start, John?
Yeah, so it took me. I reflected quite a lot on your brief, Dharmesh, because I was starting to think, all right, if I had a wild card and carte blanche to do whatever I want to do in that bank, what would that stuff be? And because we are so constrained by the operative environment of a bank, which is, you know, everyone knows, hyper-regulated, capital constraints, and tech constraints. So you have to think within this box. And my work and the work of my colleague is to try to break down those walls and force the organization to think incredibly long term and think in a world where the competitive landscape is completely different. And so there is a space which I would love banks to start operating, or at least start thinking and communicating on. That's good. That's very controversial. But it's special finance. And fundamentally, how do you bank in space? Is that science fiction? Is that not science fiction? We have very strong signals that this is going to happen. Space exploration started in the 60s. And we sent people in outer space. We sent people on the moon, and there will be mission to Mars. And there's already tourists going to space. So this is probably the next iteration of the next evolution of mankind. And it's been a collective psyche for an incredible amount of time. But one of the questions you need to ask yourself if you operate in the banking world is, if this is the direction where humanity is going to go, how are you relevant in that world? If people go on very long journey to space or start colonizing other planets or other systems, how do you fulfill your mission as a financial institution and enable them to acquire whatever they need to acquire along that journey and transact whatever they need to transact along that journey? And you literally need to think about what are those key capabilities that are replicable and the ones which actually aren't replicable and that you have to build. How do you send money on incredibly long distance where it's light years distance and real-time payment? How do you do that on light year distances? Like, you have to understand physics. You have to be freaking good at finding the right materials, the right mechanism to do this. Where is value? Is value in a currency, a digital currency? Is that backed to physical stuff, digital stuff? So how do you do all those things? And what will people value in those long extraterrestrial journeys? Big question mark, right? But unless you start thinking about this stuff now, and that's probably, 50 years ahead, 100 years ahead, unless you start thinking about this now, you cannot literally pave a journey to get there.
That is amazing. You're actually thinking for the bank 50 years out. I didn't think this goes on in bank.
Well, 50 years, I'll probably be retired. I hope I will. But yes, we have this duty to start laying the foundation of that intellectual journey to make sure that the bank is resilient. So day to day, we're not working on these kind of projects, but because it's very difficult to justify. But we have the duty to actually bring that sort of thinking and distill that kind of thinking to the organization. But that's an example of what you could do from a retail perspective. But depending on the profile of the bank, National Australia Bank is not a big retail bank. It's a significant business bank. Another example of that thinking could be businesses will go on those, will go to space. How do you accompany them there? Same reflection. What will they need? What are their financial needs? Think about a scenario where a mining company cannot operate on Earth anymore and has found that the biggest deposit of rare earth or whatever is hyper valuable to mankind is on the moon, and they have to set infrastructure, set operations, send people on the moon to start operating on the moon. How do you do this? It will require tons of funding. It will require infrastructure. It will require tech. It will require, how do you price risk for this if you're a bank? We have no idea. We literally have no idea. But you need to start thinking this way.
Amazing. Amazing. I mean, let's just explore a few other ideas, because you had some in your Digital Twins book. And, for those that are listening in, Digital Twin is really a data replica of something, right? And that could be, you as an individual. It could be your business. It could be the industry that your business is in, or it could be an entire city. It could be anything really that has data behind it. And the idea very much is that you run simulations. So, you know, I wonder, you know, does wealth management itself kind of change because there's a digital twin of Dharmesh Mistry, and with the data, it predicts, you know, when I'm going to retire, what kind of income I'd like to have based on my lifestyle choices, blah, blah, blah. I mean, where does this go, John, with digital twins?
Yeah, so you could literally empower your digital twin to make decision on your behalf. And you could say, you could sit with 70-year-old Dharmesh and ask 70-year-old Dharmesh to teach today's Dharmesh on how to manage money, how to invest, how to adjust income and expenses. What are the good decisions that today's Dharmesh should be making in order to for 70-year-old Dharmesh to have the lifestyle that today's Dharmesh has already strived for? So all that can be modeled, all that, and that's actually one of the power of digital twins. You can model pretty much anything from it.
How does it account for like societal trend changes? Is that a different data set that applies to my data set? Oh my gosh.
Absolutely. You could literally take a demographic data set. You could run economic models. You can run inflation models. You can run all that sort of stuff so that 70-year-old Dharmesh can tell today's Dharmesh, hey, buddy, actually, you know what? Like, there is chances that we're going to be on a high inflationary environment for the next 5 years. So you got to ramp up your saving practices by 5% to offset this, and so on. So all the sort of stuff could be done.
And we're not talking about like today's kind of, I do a report, you know, Dharmesh asked the question, you know, a few hours later, a report comes back to me and says, you know, oh, this is what you need to do. We're talking about real time, aren't we?
We're talking about real time. And I think the other beauty is that you don't know what you don't know. And how do you ask the relevant question if you don't know the answer? Like, and that's where your digital twin can actually start informing you around, actually, you know what, Dharmesh, I've downloaded a wealth management module. And your digital twin becomes a wealth management expert and starts prompting you the way you should be thinking about money management in real time. And that's incredibly powerful. And that's probably a key differentiator with the system we do operate within at the moment, which are not real time. It's not real time. Credit decisioning is barely real time. So fascinating, huh?
Yeah, I mean, I like this idea that I can speak to myself in the future, and it's almost like this kind of like hindsight, but it's here and now, so it's a kind of foresight, right? And I get to ask it anything I like. But I mean, I think the whole idea or the concept of other data sources to feed into the picture of your own digital twin. So today, you know, banks are only dealing with the data, the financial data of Dharmesh Mistry, right? But when I start to apply, you know, what's happening in the medical field, what's happening with my diet, my exercise, et cetera, it can then start to predict like, well, okay, based on your diet and your lifestyle, you're going to live not till the average age of 82, you're going to live till 97. Now you've got 15 years more pension to cover. Yeah. Right. Today, you've taken a fairly risk averse approach, thinking you're going to be retiring soon and you'll only need the money for X years, but you need to cover an extra 15. So you still have the capacity to do that by taking a higher risk portfolio or sourcing more income to go in, et cetera. You know what I mean? So I think I like this conversation that I could be having as long as it's getting other data. Right. Yeah. I mean, that's fascinating in its own right. What about, let's take the metaverse. I mean, I'll put my hand up, right? I haven't quite seen, you know, what the metaverse brings to kind of banking as such. I get the digital twin aspect of it. Like, you know, I could be, my twin could be in the virtual world simulating, you know, stuff that, you know, is going to happen to me in the future, etc. So it kind of visualizes stuff. But beyond that, what else is there in terms of product innovation for banking in the metaverse?
So the cruel reality is that at the moment, not much, like or barely anything. You know, you could, there's some experiments which are being run that can be mocked to a degree. The most famous one is the JP Morgan virtual branch on the metaverse, where you get tigers and flying tigers and all that kind of stuff. You can't blame them. You can blame the delivery of it, but you can't blame them for actually trying and exploring and see what works and see what sticks, to try to understand what type of people go there and what would they want to experience. There's another use case from AXA, which I found quite interesting, where they used a virtual branch to showcase who they are as a brand, what they do for society, and what kind of talent is actually needed to enable them to fulfill their purpose, which I find actually quite smart, because when you read between the lines, the key assumption is that tech-savvy people would spend some time on the metaverse. And that's a way to connect those skills which are in shortage with a big old brand like AXA, who's desperately in need of tech resources. So I think that's kind of an interesting approach to it. But apart from that, in terms of financial products available on the metaverse at the moment, I'm not sure there are any. But what I think is actually really interesting, and that's what banks and insurance company to another degree needs to start thinking about, is business will happen on the metaverse. Like, it's just a question of time. And and if you are a bank, a business bank, you have to support businesses and you have to go where your customers are going. So the key question again becomes, how do you apply traditional banking and insurance mechanism from the physical world to the digital world? How do you connect this? How do you transfer value? How do you allocate capital? How do you allocate protection protection mechanism, which can go back and forth from digital world to physical world? And again, like, you need to, where your customers are, you need to be. So you need to deeply start in understanding what drives people to the metaverse. And if the answer is at the moment, well, not much outside of a gaming use case or an education use case, then you need to start thinking about what will drive people onto the metaverse or the metaverses. That's another rabbit hole.
Yeah. I mean, I get the gaming aspect of it, and I can also see that social media moves from 2D to kind of 3D environments. And, you know, you have a much more dynamic social experience there. And therefore, you know, once you're in that social environment, then in comes the retail piece, where now suddenly, you know, I'm not only chatting to John in my virtual world, but I also find some shopping that I want to do, etc. We had Cam China on the show, and she talked about, you know, being able to, instead of like actually going out and spending real money on stuff that you didn't really need, the bank encouraging you to spend in the virtual world, right? And virtual dollars. So you scratch the itch of buying this designer handbag or whatever it was that you wanted, but you didn't spend your actual money doing it. And that I thought was an interesting idea as well.
I like the idea.
We can push some of the responsibility of the things that we can behave responsibly in the real world, but in the virtual world, we can be a bit more flamboyant and, you know, absolutely, take a few gambles with our digital cash because it's not the real money as such.
Absolutely. That's a really good idea.
I mean, like with all things, John, do you think a lot of these you know, we'll take the individual things like, let's say, crypto, let's say metaverse, let's say data science and generative AI, all these as individual technologies. But then when you start to combine them, you get some new possibilities. I mean, is that something that you also look at? It's I guess, you know, I always talk about the smartphone effect. It wasn't one thing that led to the smartphone. It was a better screen, cheaper memory, absolutely, faster processing power, you know, and the internet enabling apps to be, you know, downloaded, right? So lots of things came together to make the smartphone a reality. And do you think the same thing will happen with some of these other things? They'll combine to give us, you know, better products and services?
100%. I think I'll go on to a slight different territory than metaverse, digital twins, and spatial finance. But let's go on to something that is close to all of us, and that's climate change. The question is, if you're a bank, the question is, how do you operate in a climate-altered world? And how do you enable your customers to operate and be resilient in a climate-altered world? So you have these traditional three C's of banking being credit, collateral, character, and there will be a fourth C being climate. The reason why I go into that territory is because we will soon be in a position to do incredibly stuff in the space of business resilience, personal resilience, with a climate lens on. If you start thinking about science, technology, generative AI, and banking, and you throw all this into a big pot, all of the sudden you can have banks and insurance companies playing a major role in informing their customers on what is their own exposure to climate risk? What are the unique and bespoke transition options? And how do you start embedding finance into those transition options so that their customers are more resilient than the rest? And resilient customers or resilient businesses are the ones which are going to attract talent, attract capital, and attract clients. So there is a massive vested interest for banks and insurance companies to heavily invest in that space and leverage new technologies to augment science and bring those insights to their customers. Because fundamentally, at a customer level, you don't have the ability to get access to those insights. But banks and insurance companies have such scales and are so predominant in developed economies that they can actually serve those insights to their customers. So the answer is yes, there's new forms of products, whether it's banking, whether it's insurance, or experiences which are going to be brought by the connection of those different trends.
Yeah, I mean, I love this whole aspect of the climate thing, because I'm almost going to start calling it embedded climate, because in the finance world, you can absolutely see some companies starting to use climate data to kind of and look at customer behavior and start to price products based on, you know, how net neutral they are, or how net neutral their business is, or how net neutral the businesses that they buy from are, etc. You know, so we've seen some early carbon calculators based off banking data, but I think that's the very, very early days of this, and fundamentally there'll be products priced around your behavior towards the planet, right?
Absolutely.
So I think that's coming.
It's coming in, that's cool. No doubt.
Any other areas, John, that, you know, we haven't, I mean, like literally we started off going out to space and into a virtual world. So what other areas do you think, you know, would be interesting to cover?
Yeah, look, I think probably that, if you zoom down that notion of spatial finance and you take it from space and you bring it down to Earth, one of the possibility, and again, if like you are unconstrained by your core banking and all the, let's assume you are unconstrained at all, spatial finance for people like you and I. How do you start understanding customers' movement, customer behaviors, customers' physical world? Because banks understand customers from a data perspective or a credit perspective, but don't necessarily understand the physical world they operate within. So now you can access geospatial data, Hertz observation data, metadata, metalocation data, movement data, and you can start forming a picture of how is Dharmesh uniquely connecting with his environment? How is John uniquely connecting and operating within his environment? What patterns do we see? Can some of those patterns be augmented by banking products? I'll give you an example. I'm on my way back to work and I stop by there's a real estate agency just downstairs from where I live. Imagine that I just stop by and I have connected lens or whatever, or an AR experience where I'm looking at a place and all of a sudden the characteristic of that place, the location of that place, the risk profile of that place is known in real time by my bank. And I receive a message, hey, John, you're pre-approved for this property. You could go and bet for it. That's the sort of possibilities that you can start playing with when you connect geospatial data, asset movement data, earth observation, and banking data. But again, technically it's actually not science fiction, but it is science fiction for a bank because you are not allowed to operate within those sort of environment. So the finance.
I mean, I think there's two constraints that we see clearly from the banks. One is that they don't necessarily source non-financial data externally, and they source very little external data as such anyway. And second is much more about, their core banking systems, tied to kind of, basic capabilities around finance, right? So doing things like dynamic or real-time pricing, not possible because, like, I think over 50% of core banking systems are not real-time today, right? We think they are because, sometimes we can get a balance, et cetera, or transact overnight. But that doesn't make them real-time. It just means that they're doing something while the batch job is still running, right?
Exactly.
But I like the idea. I mean, a couple of themes I think are coming through. One is that, more of the banking products or services coming in the future will start to rely on external data, different data sets. Secondly, things are becoming much more real time and dynamic. Things that we thought we could only do offline are now becoming real time actions, like you say, you're walking past an estate agent, you immediately have been pre-approved for an offer. I mean, both of those things, the credit analysis and the real-time offer weren't possible before, but they're absolutely possible right now.
I think it's just going to accelerate, and that's probably going to sound a bit naive, but one of the biggest threats that the banking industry is actually facing is not coming from other banks. It's coming from tech companies who actually already have those capabilities. They know how to deal with orchestration of various sorts of data, analyzing and bringing intelligence real time. So the competitive landscape is going to change dramatically and will force banks to stop thinking like tech companies who happen to be in the business of allocating funding.
That's a brilliant point. And, maybe not the topic of this conversation, but it's worth bringing up because, when we come to kind of product innovation, we typically look at what's going around, right? Oh, somebody's launched a buy now, pay later. And how few banks have actually been able to launch the same because actually, the business model is totally different to their loans, right?
Mm.
And their core banking system can't handle them, right? So innovation beyond the core is absolutely key for things like that, right? But I think, you know, looking at a broader data set and kind of real-time processing is a fundamental kind of aspect of these big tech companies. They've got the broadest data sets. They've got the biggest computers. They've got the best technologies. Now, I guess, you know, in that question is, do we actually think that they'll get into banking, actually own the license, or will they just capitalize on distribution? You know, so fundamentally, the product's being underwritten by a bank and all the rates are being handled by a bank, whereas they're just owning the customer relationship.
Yeah. Yeah. Look, that's my assumption. If I were a tech company wanting to play in that space, I would not want to have to deal with the reg. I would just want to own the customer relationship layer where the value is. It's not about manufacturing products. It's about understanding the customer. So you create an ecosystem of relevant offering to that customer and you orchestrate this. So that's where the value is. So my bet, my money would be on partnering with an underwriter, but becoming the orchestrator and distributor. And this interesting signals coming from the UK, you probably heard that Alphabet has taken a serious investment in Monzo last week. So maybe this is the plan. And I've been looking at Monzo. I've been monitoring Monzo with great interest since 2017. So I'm very, very pleased to see how they're progressing. And the fact that Alphabet is betting on them is probably a testament to their success. But that might be the scenario that you and I just described.
Yeah, I mean, I think a few interesting players in the market right now. One is Monzo, where, you know, they've actually turned the ship around in a spectacular way, right? Not only are they, you know, in profitability, but their growth rate is phenomenal, right?
Absolutely.
So it seems like there's a broader strategy at play, obviously, to hit some different countries, but you can't ignore Revolut in that aspect either.
Absolutely.
You know, already, you know, 40 million customers, in 35 countries, you know, and still growing. Literally, I interviewed them a couple of weeks ago, and in 2 weeks, they had grown their client base globally by 2 million. I mean, that's crazy.
Right? It's insane. It's insane. And arrived in Australia, by the way. So.
And do you know what's similar between Monzo and Revolut? A brand new core that is not tied to one jurisdiction and can handle any product, right?
Interesting. So it's not just accounts, I didn't know that.
And it's not just in one country. Yeah. Yeah.
I didn't know that. That's like, really, really interesting.
Yeah. And this is why, you know, like product definition outside of the core is going to be quite important, because you can't be held back by a core that is limiting what you do versus your competitors. Forget about big tech. Even if we just take, you know, Starling, Monzo, those challenges that have managed to scale. Yeah.
Absolutely.
Fascinating. Any last thoughts, John? I mean, we have literally gone out of this world into virtual worlds as well. But any last thoughts on product innovation?
A comment more than a thought, like just never stop exploring, because when you think you understand that space, you probably just don't. Never stop exploring.
That's good advice from probably the one of the first digital explorers in financial services that I've ever found. But thank you so much for your time, John. It's been really interesting conversation, and I hope a lot of people take heed of your visions and future understanding. Yeah.
Likewise, and thanks again for having me, Damesh.
Thank you for tuning into Banking Blueprints. We invite you to stay tuned for future episodes. On behalf of our Season 1 host, Dharmesh Mistry, and the team here at Zafin, we're glad you're here. Thanks again. We'll see you soon.